Good evening and welcome to everyone. I'm Paula Eat, the Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome everyone to the meeting this evening, particularly to members of the community who are in the public gallery this evening, and also to those members who are watching along on YouTube from home. It's 5:30pm and so I declare the meeting for Wednesday the 20th of April 2022 officially open. I wish to advise that it is Council's policy that meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with Council's policy, I would ask the Acting General Manager to confirm that the recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reek, Deputy Mayor Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening we have the Acting General Manager, Dr Stevenson, the Chief Financial Officer, Mr Breen, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, our Senior Manager, Capital Works, Mr Reed, our Coordinator of Statutory Planning, Mrs Stevenson, our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton, and our Consultant Planner, Mr Wells. Apologies this evening, we have two apologies from Councillor Grace and Councillor Wass. On page one, a confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number six held on the 4th of April 2022 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. There were no workshops held since the last Council meeting. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest that they would like to declare? Councillor Gladewright, then Councillor Street. Councillor Gladewright.
Thank you. I'd like to declare an interest in item 13.1 and I won't be sitting in on the decision making for that one.
Thank you. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I declare an interest in relation to a closed session item, panel for the provision of legal services, and I will leave the room.
Thank you. Any further declarations of interest? Thank you. Staying on page two, transfer of agenda items. Are there any items on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who's with us this evening like to ask a question without notice? No, thank you very much. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions without notice from members of the community. But if you do wish to submit a question for future meeting, you should send it to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. I always sound like an infomercial when I do that. I need like a 30-second one that we can run on television. The questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question without notice? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is about ice sport facilities and the Kingborough Sports Precinct. Tasmania's only ice skating rink and facility for ice sports in Glenorchy has been sold, and it's been the subject of some media attention recently due to its closure resulting in the total loss of ice sports facilities in the state. We're the only state not to have a dedicated ice sport facility. My question is, will our council consider the inclusion of a dedicated ice sport facility within the Kingborough Sports Precinct as part of the future directions planning?
Thank you, Councillor Cordover. I am aware, of course, of the demise of the ice skating rink at Glenorchy. I think probably many of us here have memories from childhood. I have a scar on my hand from when I skated there as a child. But it's certainly a loss to that community. This matter was raised with me recently, just at a very high level, by a member of the state government who inquired as to whether we had any land availability around the sports centre precinct, and that's something that we're looking at the moment. They do require quite a substantial footprint of around 4,000 square metres to be able to house a competition size rink. So an initial assessment at looking at the available land is that we probably can't accommodate it in that area, but we've only had a preliminary look at this stage, so we've undertaken to have a further look and report back to the members of the government who raised this with us. Thank you. I've got Councillor Street next and then Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is in relation to traffic lights on the Channel Highway. I've had an inquiry from a member of the public in relation to the traffic lights and pedestrian crossing that are adjacent to Banjo's Bakery. He raised concerns that cars seem to be speeding through the flashing orange lights, and was particularly concerned that he had almost been hit. Anecdotally, I know that that is an area of difficulty for others as well. His specific query was whether or not there was an opportunity to provide CCTV cameras in that area to try and identify road users that are going through that area at speed. I know that we have had some funding for cameras in the past, but I don't know about their location, so I'm wondering whether there's any opportunity for their inclusion there.
Thank you. I will ask Mr. Smee to address that. I know that there have been concerns raised previously about those lights from the Access Committee about the amount of time that they're actually on, that they allow to actually complete the crossing. And when we made representations to the Department of State Growth, from the Access Committee, they extended the crossing time by 1 second. And I am not kidding, 1 second. And that was in response to somebody who's in a power chair who was struggling to get across in the allocated time, and now they have 1 more second. So, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we have 3 CCTV cameras in that area that would be capable of picking up traffic offences of that nature.
So that is probably a matter then that should be referred to, because they go straight to Tasmania Police here. Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I have 3 questions, all relating to Bruny Island. Could we please revisit having dog poo bag dispensers at 4 sites on Bruny Island, at Adventure Bay, Alona, Barnes Bay and Dens Point, and the Bruny Island Community Association will undertake to keep them filled with bags? That was one of the reasons we were told before that we couldn't have bags there, was because there was nobody to refill the dispenser.
We might have to take that on notice because we don't have Mr. Reeve here with us this evening.
Thank
Unless
you.
Mr. Reed would like to have a go at it. No, he's passed. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, what a surprise.
We'll take that on notice.
Could traffic counters please be put on the Lighthouse Road on Bruny Island in this short section of gravel road that leads to the area that parks maintain? There's been an estimation that there were 15,000 cars between mid-December and the beginning of February, and I think we probably should take an accurate count rather than go on what the residents are saying, but it would be a good place
to have
a count.
Yep, we'll take that one on notice as well.
Okay. Could the hall committees, this is through you, Mayor, to Mr. Smee, could the hall committees be inducted so they can do physical work on the halls? There was a proposal discussed some time ago with you, Mr. Smee, I believe, and nothing seems to have eventuated, and there is a lot of work needing to be done on the Alona Hall, including gutters, cleaning and the leaking roof, which they're quite happy to do, but they don't have the authority to work on the hall.
Mr. Smee, could you give us some advice on that, please? If someone turns their light off. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. Volunteers undertaking work on our halls create some significant risk management issues for us, and we've previously had advice from our insurer that it's not possible to have volunteers work on our halls or indeed our other buildings like they may have done in the past, and certainly we appreciate the enthusiasm of our volunteers to undertake such work, but the constraints of modern risk management makes it impossible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next I had Councillor Westwood, then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just wondering if there's been any update on the granting of a firearms licence adjacent to the Margate Primary School, please.
Yes. Dr. Stevenson, did you want to... Oh, sorry, could you repeat the question? Sorry, we were just dealing with an issue. We had a member of the community tell us that the audio wasn't working on the live stream, so we were trying to sort that out. Apologies.
That's fine. Just wondering if there's any update you are able to provide on the granting of a firearms licence by TAS Police to the business adjacent to Margate Primary School.
Thank you. I actually did meet with the principal of Margate Primary School today in relation to this for a discussion about perhaps how the members of the school community could express their concern about that they have about guns being sold adjacent to their school community. I did write to the Minister for Police and Emergency Services and the Commissioner for Police the week before last, I believe, and I received a response that was not satisfactory, and I have since received a response from the Commissioner for Police, and I'm about to write back again because the point of my letter was to ask that there be a review of the legislation so that councils can represent the views of communities when licences for selling of firearms are being considered in different locations, because at the moment we can have a say when it comes to liquor licensing and gaming, but we don't get a say in relation to sale of firearms. Unfortunately, in the response, the Commissioner for Police did not address that part of the letter. So I'm about to write back. I've just got a draft that I'm looking at the moment to ask for some specific timeframes around when a review would take place in consultation with the local government sector, because this is obviously not an issue that is just affecting Kingborough. It would affect other parts of the state as well. So hopefully once I receive a response to that, we can have some further clarity as to what the situation might be going forward. I will say that there has been some suggestion that council approved this the situation that we now find ourselves in. That is not correct. There was no change of use required because it was general retail and hire, and under general retail and hire, the sale of firearms, as along with a whole lot of other retail items, is permitted. So at no time has council given approval for that dealership to be there, because we didn't have any opportunity. There was no mechanism that would enable us to provide a response. So it has been quite frustrating, because I think the perception in some parts of the community are that we gave the approval. That was not the case. But once I receive a further response from the Commissioner for Police, I'll certainly circulate that to councillors. Thank you. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few questions. The first one relates further to the bypass, Kingston Bypass and Algona Road project. I'm wondering if we could ask the project team if they could provide a workshop to councillors so we can see what they're up to with that before it goes to a second stage of engagement.
Certainly, we can put that on the agenda. And I have collated all the responses I received from councillors in relation to suggested workshops, and I'm going to sit down with the Acting General Manager next week and we'll try and slot those in various places. So, thank you.
Thank you. And the next one's in regards to playground upgrades. A couple of questions on that. What playground upgrades will occur before the end of this financial year? I can ask all the questions at once, or I can
Let's take them one by one. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we have a number of playgrounds that are currently being actioned in terms of design work. They include the playground at Willow Bend, at Alamo Close, Silverwater Park and Drew Point. I can't give a time frame as to when work will start on that. It's very much dependent on availability of contractors who are very busy. There's a limited number in Tasmania and most of them are very committed in terms of their workload at the moment, but certainly the intent would be to get at least two of those projects commenced before the end of this financial year, with the remainder for the design work to be done.
Thank you. And just how are we prioritising this list?
Through you, Mayor, the list has already been prioritised by Council in terms of some of them fall out of the land sales project, and it was agreed that we would do them in relation to the order in which they were sold. So two of them relate to land sales project, the other two one is a capital project and the other is public open space. In terms of priority, they're all at the top of the list and they're all being progressed as a priority, but the implementation and works, as I said before, will need to be determined by contractor availability.
Thank you. And noting that some community members do follow the budget and projects, and what communication will we have in regards to, say, the Drew Point playground where the master plan has been sitting there for a few years? Will we do any comms to the community in regards to the timelines for this?
It's just me.
Through you, Mayor, once timelines are known, we'd certainly be communicating them to the community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. And there are no further questions without notice from councillors? If not, we'll move on. Still on page two, we have questions on notice from councillors. We had the first one from Councillor Bastone in relation to the Woodbridge Hall and an officer's response from Mr Smee. And over on page three, a question from Councillor Midgley in relation to Kingston Bypass and Algona Road roundabout upgrade, and an officer's response from Dr Stevenson. The open session of Council now adjourns and the Planning Authority commences at 5:47 p.m. As indicated previously, for the record, Councillor Gladewright has left the room as she has declared a conflict of interest in this agenda item. So the officer's reports to Planning Authority, we have DA 2021-548, development application for apartment building, 50 multiple dwellings, stage 3 at Kingston Park, 7 Goshawk Way, Kingston, with a recommendation on page 30. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please.
So moved.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova, and seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. What we have before us is the development application for an apartment building, 50 multiple dwellings, stage 3 at Kingston Park, 7 Goshawk Way, Kingston, and the officer's recommendation, which I support, is to refuse this development application. And the reasons are many, in that it doesn't comply with the planning scheme or the future desired character statements. But on the majority of clauses, it's important to note that this development does comply with the Kingbury Interim Planning Scheme and the provisions of IPD 4, which commenced in February 2021. So, for example, on the issue of height limits, which has been raised in the media recently, it's important to note that this proposal does not comply. But really, for me, that is not the main issue. The main issue for me is that of the parking, and also the fact that it fails to provide for mixed use at ground level, it doesn't facilitate community interaction, and it has an absence of detail on the sustainability of the development. So, quickly to that issue of height limits, the prescribed height limit here is 18 metres, and this development proposes a building height of 22.4, including rooftop plant rooms. Excluding the plant rooms, the height is 21.9, metres, and therefore a discretion applies. The purpose and intention of designing or redesigning the old high school site in the Kingston CBD was in fact to encourage higher density and to attract more people to live in this vibrant commercial centre and our vibrant municipality. So the idea was to cater for a growing community and a growing population in Kingborough. And since those original conceptions, we've seen a housing crisis spiral out of control as a result of state government's failure to deal with its responsibility, a state government that's dragging its heels rather than immediately housing the 4,300 Tasmanians currently on the public housing waiting list. But so I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that we know that in the centre of Kingston we do want to see higher density, but critically, with this very special thing that we have here in Kingston Park, we want to make sure that we do it in a way of which we can all be proud, that we increase the density in a way that is good for people and for planet, and in a way that encourages social interaction and mixed use. So the Kingston Park Special Area Plan itself makes specific mention of consolidating higher density living within Kingston to a location which contains a more appropriate level of physical infrastructure than the surrounding general residential zone. So the main issue here is really where this proposal does not justify, in my opinion, is on the issue of parking and on the issue of the ground level. So we can see at page 9, if we turn our attention to 1.4, the independent review of design and car parking, that Terroir Architects were commissioned to do an independent review. They identified issues with the submitted perspective views. They identified the potential to create an impression of development towering over the park, noting that the impact of which cannot be assessed without a suitable long section. It suggests that a stepped form with lower elements near the hub and greater height in the northern section could better provide a human scale at the hub and park while reducing overshadowing to those areas. So I really want to highlight this element, that what we're saying here is that there are alternatives that exist which wouldn't tower over the park, that would be more appropriate and that would feel better both for the community, for visitors and those living there alike. It considers that the ground level facade, which appears as a podium above the rising topography, precludes a connection of the development to its surrounds, both in terms of design and resident interaction. So to me, this is one of the major failings. Now to move to the issue of parking. In effect, for every single parking space beneath the standards, every single parking spot less than the standards requires, that is in effect passing on that cost of parking to the community, to the rest of us. The developer gets to keep the profit by not providing enough spaces, and the rest of us have to pay for that parking in perpetuity. Because naturally what happens, if you think of any number of families that have, you know, living in a two-bedroom or a three-bedroom unit, most people will have two cars. Now, I obviously want to see more active transport and people move around without cars. That's the best outcome. But it's not like people won't bring their two cars. It's just that they'll move those cars onto the street. And in effect, all of Kingborough residents will be paying because this one development didn't want to provide enough parking spaces. So this proposal is for a multi-storey building with 50 apartments, but it only provides in the application for 54 spaces. And so think of your own household. Think of how many households around us, how many of us nowadays have food delivered, have packages delivered, how many of us have momentarily double parked whilst saying hello to a neighbour or popping into a building? If the development proposal does not adequately... May I just have three more minutes?
Right. You're moving, Councillor Midgley. So the motion is that... excuse me. The motion is that Councillor Cordova be granted an additional 3 minutes. All those in favour? Aye. Against?
No.
Could we have a show of hands, please? All those in favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Fox and Reet. Those against? Councillors Street, Bastone and Westwood. The motion is carried. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. To sum up on this point of parking, there will be people in those apartments who have two cars, and by not providing enough spaces, those cars will be moving onto the street. Now, we know that there's significant issues that are coming down the pike, pardon the pun, in Kingston because of the removal of parking to accommodate the Kingston Park development. We're now living in a world where food delivery drivers, couriers, visitors and multiple car households are just a part of living in the real world. And rather than allowing proponents and developers to abrogate their responsibility and pass that cost on to the rest of us, I think it's really important that we actually design this development to be fit for purpose. And As you can read in the report, particularly I draw our attention to page 30, where it says that the proposal is inconsistent with the desired future character statements, A, B and D at F3.4, and the purpose statements at F3.1. It fails to provide for mixed use at ground level, it doesn't facilitate community interaction, it will unreasonably overlook public areas, and it has an absence of detail on the sustainability of the development. So for those reasons, I am pleased to be moving the officer's recommendation to refuse this development. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next I've got Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, you mentioned that we want developments that are good for people and good for the planet. We've been talking for some time about infill development versus greenfield development. My understanding was that this council's vision for Kingston Park and the Kingston CBD was that we would encourage infill development. If we don't go up, we will be going out, which will involve taking down many more trees than we already are needing to accommodate the current vision. Not everyone wants two car parking spaces. A lot of people are downsizers. They are wanting to move somewhere like the Kingston CBD, where we have a medical precinct, where we have access to good transport, where we have access to shops, where they can watch their grandchildren play in the beautiful park that we've built. I'll just pull you up on something. There are actually 87 car parking spaces provided, not 54. So that is, I think it was 1.74 spots for every one of those apartments that's proposed in this development application. 87 car parking spaces, 10 open air visitor spaces, and 77 are covered resident spaces, along with one electric vehicle charging station. The council did engage the services of an independent traffic and car parking assessment from Hubble Traffic. Key points of that review, as noted on page 10 of our report, is that tandem car parking could be reasonable given the location of the site, and a reduction in car parking could be supported given the location of the site and the public transport options, and the ability for future owners to determine if the number of spaces per unit is adequate for their lifestyle needs. So I don't have an issue. I don't share your concerns about parking. I don't think someone who has three cars will buy an apartment in the middle of the Kingston CBD, and I don't think that that's the market that these are targeted to. I think it's perfectly fine to have 1.74 car parks per apartment. The vision, I thought, of this council was that we would concentrate in a residential, high-density development at Kingston Park. We have worked very cooperatively and constructively with Traders in Purple. They have a solid track record. They have been very successful to date in stages one and two. This is the third stage of their proposed development. I think that, I think the proposal put forward is in line with our vision. I know that it might not be to everyone's taste, but it is high density apartment living, and if we don't build this kind of residential accommodation in the central Kingston CBD, then where are we going to build it? A couple of other things in relation to the planning assessment response on page 12. The purpose statements apply across the entire specific area plan, which consists of five underlying zones. Use and development in each zone is contributing to achieving these overarching purpose statements. With respect to each clause, it is considered that the development recognises the strategic location through a housing form that is unique to the municipal area. B, takes up the opportunity for high-density residential use and development that broadens the choice of housing types in the LGA. C, increases the resident population close to retail, entertainment and community services at a scale that is likely to generate indirect private investment. Provides dedicated bicycle facilities. and an EV charger, as I mentioned before. Adds to the diversity of the built form in the plan area and provides housing with amenity benefits from vistas and setting of the park, harbour and surrounding community and retail services, provides opportunities for passive surveillance of the hub and park through extensive glazing and mitigates the potential impact of wind tunnelling and establishes a well-defined built edge to Pardaloe Parade, the hub and Kingston Park. H goes on to mention that, however, the development application fails to provide active uses and active frontages at ground level. So of the eight things that are listed, we'll say 7.5 meet the overarching purpose statements and half doesn't. So I would say that in terms of meeting the planning scheme, this does meet the planning scheme, and I think that I think the assessment is subjective. I note a couple of things. For example, on page 6, we talk about the solid walls have a light beige colour to concrete on plan or vertical pattern.
Sorry, your time. Did you want an extension?
I'm happy to move that one.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Westwood. I had Councillor Fox next, then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I hear what Councillor Westwood says, and I do disagree with her because I feel the vision that we had when we originally had the concept for this was that we would be encouraging high-rise buildings and high-rise residential living, okay, but there was to be an interactive space so that we could have the potential in the future for commercial development. This does not provide that. The independent review of design and car parking identifies that the potential to create an impression of development towering over the park, noting that the impact of which cannot be assessed without a suitable long section, suggests that a stepping form with lower elements near the hub and greater height in the northern section could better provide a human scale at the hub and the park while reducing overshadowing to these areas. The last thing we want is for children of this community to be excluded from the park because they're feeling that they are being overlooked and surveillance from those buildings rather than relaxing and enjoying the public space. They also, the consultant also says that considers the ground level facade, which appears as a podium above the rising topography and precludes a connection of the development to the surrounding area, both in terms of design and residential interaction. It goes on about other issues like the glazing and landscaping, but to me they're not as important as the other issues that I have mentioned. The car parking could have been done better, and I think that probably is arguable, but in reading the conclusion on page 30, noting the location, elevation and visibility of the site from surrounding areas and particularly those views from the southern outlet and the Kingston CBD Main Street, it's likely that any future development on the site will become a landmark item for the Kingston CBD and broader Kingston. Moreover, the development proposed is of a new type of Kingston. It's likely to set the scene for future development in the CBD to follow if it's approved. While there are a number of positive elements to the proposal, many elements fail to respond positively to the surrounds and as such will adversely affect the surrounds. Other elements lack sufficient detail to demonstrate compliance with the relevant planning scheme provisions. The absence of mixed use, the lack of ground level activity coupled with the solid ground level walls are significant issues. The proposed arrangement for car parking and stormwater management are also significant issues. The application has been assessed against the applicable standards in the planning scheme. The assessment has identified that a number of applicable standards are not complied with either by acceptable solutions or performance criteria. And the last line is what worries me. The degree of non-compliance cannot be rectified by conditions. And that's why it's recommended for refusal.
And I would be really pleased if the independent planner who is with us tonight would be able to perhaps answer the question that if there were any standards or if there were any way that we could possibly refuse this with conditions, would that help at all, or is there any condition that we could modify rather than just refuse this and let it go to the higher authority for an independent assessment?
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Mr. Wells. Let me just turn you on first. Thank you.
Sorry, through the Mayor. Given the scale of this development, it is difficult and I think inappropriate for the Planning Authority to try and modify the development by conditions. That might give rise to unintended consequences, or those conditions might prove to be impractical in purpose. There may be opportunities to modify the car parking layout to make that tandem car parking arrangement more functional, but this is a basement level of a significant multi-storey building, so I don't think it's practical or appropriate for a planning authority to be making those sorts of modifications.
Thank you. Next I had Councillor Midgley, then Councillor Street.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. I also support, along with a few other councillors, the recommendation of refusal in this report, but I do note that it is disappointing to have to do this, but there are many reasons, as Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox have stated. But I guess the main disappointment is that it was a vision that Council created a specific area plan after many workshops and through the Planning Authority role as councillors. We've owned the land and we have engaged the developers via an EOI process. And so that is disappointing to note that. But I'd also like to be reminded, because I know there's a lot of community conversations, a bit outside the role of the Planning Authority, but in regards to this high-density development in Kingston Park. And as councillors and staff, we know that this high-density development in Kingston Park is to be occurring, if it doesn't get passed tonight, but in the future. And I think that's just important to put on record in regards to that reminder of that vision. But also, when it first came to councillors, there was discussion in regards to an aged care facility. And when did then that changeover actually set in concrete that it would be an apartment development versus an aged care facility? And also with that, are there any other sites that a development of such a scale could be in Kingston Park as well?
Mr. Smee, thank you.
Through you, Mayor, that's correct. The original vision that Traders in Purple provided to Council did indeed include an aged care facility on this particular lot. However, it was the intention that the facility would be a five-storey development, so multi-storey, including both aged care and independent living units. So it's in terms of the height and the bulk of the building, they're very similar. What's obviously changed is the use, and that from memory was a decision made by Traders in Purple early last year. Having done their market research, they indicated there was no market demand for aged care in Kingston, and the provisions of the project delivery agreement that Council signed with Traders in Purple allowed for that change to be made.
Thank you. Councillor Mitchell.
Sorry, can you just explain that delivery agreement? So that is
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. Having gone through the EOI process, Council then agreed that Traders in Purple would be the exclusive developer to which we sold land parcels, and we sold those land. We will sell those land parcels in accordance with an agreement which is known as the PDA, the Project Delivery Agreement, and that outlines in detail the process and mechanisms by which the sale of land will occur and the land will be developed, which obviously is subject to the planning controls that are a separate issue as part of the planning scheme, and there are conditions precedent within the Project Delivery Agreement that make sale of lots contingent upon obtaining planning approval, amongst other things.
Thank you. And when choosing this five-storey type development as it was first speculated, in regards to the refusal grounds of the building height, the design does not respond to topography or proximity to public spaces. I'm trying to understand that there could always be, depending on where it happens, but the vision was to always have a building of that height. But if we unpack that topography and proximity to public spaces, there was always, how do we get around that? I guess is what I'm trying to understand. In regards to that, was the report, and stated in the report, many elements failed to respond positively to the surrounding areas, and these will affect the surrounds, and it's the refusals on the ground of the topography and proximity. So at what height would be, I guess, positive in regards to responding to the topography and proximity to public spaces when it actually is zoned to be in that space?
Mr. Wells, can you help us with that one? After you put your light on, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Through the Mayor. The specific area plans intended to certainly facilitate a building of at least 18 metres height. That's the acceptable solution. In doing so, it's specifically caught up a number of ways to mitigate any adverse impact of height, the overlooking. So we're looking at ground level activity, so that encourages a human scale at ground level. We're looking at a range of other design measures that could be adopted so that height can be there, but it can occur in a way Terrier identified the potential for it to be staggered and set back from the public space. There's a range of ways that it can that height can be there, but in a way that better fits in with the surrounds and is more interactive, more human scale at ground level.
Great. Thank you. And at what stage was the independent planner engaged? And in regards to the many grounds for the refusal, were the applicants aware of where it wasn't meeting the criteria, and did they propose any other designs, such as what an independent planner has, and what stage of the report around the topography and different scale and things like that?
Dr. Stevenson.
Mr. Smee, may I add to this? We have the independent planner on standby to do the assessment, so that's post-advertising. But council officers, through project meetings, have had many conversations with Traders in Purple around the types of issues that do appear in the independent planner's report. There were some issues which were resolved, things like bird strike issues, bushfire hazard management and so forth, so they were resolved through the further information requests. And the parking certainly had been raised by council staff because it does not meet the engineering standards. So then I would say that generally these issues would not have come as a surprise to traders.
Okay, thank you. noting, I mean, there's other factors as well in regards to insufficient glazing on ground level, which Councillor Cordova, I think, mentioned, and the insufficient landscaping detail, sunlight issues, and no provision for water-sensitive urban design. As I noted, when I first started, like, it definitely is disappointing that we have to refuse because we, as councillors, have known that there would be a high-density development in this area, and it's disappointing it's not sustainable and aspirational and doesn't fit with, I guess, a vision that meets the planning scheme. Just a point around the car parking from, opinion that I sit with, I guess, you know, the times are changing around that, and we see many developments in Hobart that are decreasing the car parking spaces, as Councillor Westwood said, because we are looking for, you know, hopefully there can be more EV charging. That's what I'd love to see, more EV charging spaces in there. But again, that probably falls out of the planning scheme remit to actually get them to do that. And if there could be availability for shared car parking spaces, like the Commons in Hobart, they've got a number of spaces for shared car parking. I think it would be, and again, I know I ask these questions, they always seem to fall out of the planning authority remit, but is there any way, I mean, don't know what the process will happen if it is, if we do agree with the refusal tonight, the majority, is there anything that the developers can take on board in regards to extra EV parking spaces or having availability for shared car parking spaces? Or does that fall outside the line of a planning authority able to make that happen?
Through you, Mayor. It does fall largely outside of the planning authority. It's more a matter for the project meetings between council and traders in purple. But the PDA does not provide us with an absolute instructive power in that regard. It has to be mediated between the two parties.
And in the specific area plan, sorry, one more question, everyone. Specific area plan, I can't remember if it was in there or not, regarding green walls and public, perhaps rooftop gardens and things like that. Again, has that ever been discussed with Traders in Purple in regards to those sort of design elements as well, thinking sustainable and aspirational for the future, where we're going to see, you know, many developments in Hobart leading the way in this space, and it'd be great to see if we had something like this in Kingborough.
Dr. Stevenson or Mr. Smith?
I might have to look to Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith.
Sorry. Through you, Mayor, certainly environmental sustainable design is one of the elements that's referred to in the SAP, and it's one of the matters that we had discussions with traders on in the lead up to them lodging the DA. But ultimately, council, whilst we're a development partner, we're not a joint development partner in that, you know, we sit around the table as equal partners in terms of designing this particular development. Traders bear all of the financial risk in relation to this project, and ultimately they are the ones that will submit the development application based on their assessment as to whether it will meet the planning scheme or not. But to answer the question, yes, we certainly did flag Council's desire to see environmental sustainable design included as part of the design for this particular project, but our ability to enforce that through the PDA, as Dr. Stevenson mentioned, is not there.
Thank you.
Next, I've got Councillor Street, then Councillor Bastow.
Thank you, Mayor. I've got some questions to start off with just in relation to the independent planning consultant. Similar to Councillor Minchley, am I to understand that the independent planning consultant is engaged, is on standby for the entirety of the process, and then is engaged after the application has been finalised and advertised?
Dr. Stevenson's nodding.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. So we go through the process of doing preliminary assessments and RFI requests without the input of the independent consultant.
Yes, that's correct, although we did also have some other independent work undertaken to support that further information process.
So am I also correct in saying that the applicant hasn't actually seen the advice of the independent planning consultant until such time as it comes out in the report, or was it provided beforehand?
They were provided notice just prior that they, because it's a planning authority report, it's provided in the same time frame as usual.
So
they were, sorry, can I add to that? They were provided with advice some time ago that what they were proposing was not going to meet the requirements of the planning scheme.
So I suppose my question is, because, and I sort of take the view that we do to a certain extent stand behind the independent advice in making some of these calls, is there not a bit of a procedural fairness issue in that we have undertaken these miniature assessments in effect to get RFIs done, and then we drop the independent consultant report as part of the report and don't give them the same opportunity as we did during the RFI process to necessarily answer those queries and issues? And I know that we're not under any obligation to do that, but we do, and we have discussed this many times, that we need to take a collaborative approach with applicants. And is there not some disconnect there between those two concepts?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. I would say that while they didn't see Mr. Wells' report, these are not issues that have not been discussed with traders through our project meetings. So they had full awareness of the concerns because they were raised through the further information requests and the project meetings.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I've read the report thoroughly and I've reviewed all of the documentation that's gone with it. As everyone's aware, the planning scheme is a performance-based planning scheme, and when we're required to look at performance criteria, there's significant discretion for the planning authority in how they look at particular applications and particular performance criteria and how they assess. Necessarily, it's a discretionary process in many cases, and one on which minds can differ, whether they be professional minds, whether they be lay minds like ours. In my case, I don't share the same concerns as the mover of the motion in relation to building height and parking. I don't consider that the application as it stands fails to meet the performance criteria on the basis of building height. It seems to me that the one significant factor that has been left out in terms of the assessment of the building height and whether it complies with the performance criteria within the SAP is the fact that this is the first piece of significant high-density development that's going to occur in this area. Of course, it is going to have an appearance of structure and form that is somewhat domineering. It's the first of what we hope to be a number of higher density developments in this area. And of course, being the first, that was going to be the case. There is an element to the assessment on the performance criteria in which we're asked to assess appearance of the building. I simply don't agree that it is brutalising to the surrounding area in the manner that might have been suggested by others. And look, the appearance of the building and how it appears to others is always going to be a matter of opinion. I look at these plans, I actually think it's quite an attractive building. There's no getting around that for me. I just don't agree that the height and bulk is excessive for the area and excessive for what we ultimately have put forward as our vision for the area. It's been pointed out that this is an area where our master plan was concerned that we wanted something of this density. It wasn't the same use, granted, but it is still filling a significant need in the community. But we expected there to be something of this bulk and scale in that area. That was what we expected all along. To turn around and now say that the height, bulk and form of the building is one of the reasons that we're refusing it, I simply don't understand. In terms of the other significant issue, car parking, I don't agree that there are not sufficient car spaces and that... I don't agree that the performance criteria are not met, the acceptable solution is not met, but I don't agree that the performance criteria are not met. And I don't agree on that, especially with one of the bases on which we're refusing, being that there's not sufficient alternatives. This is an area which is the best serviced for public transport in the Kingston municipality. It would go close to being one of the best serviced for public transport in Greater Hobart. It's close to services. It's exactly where we want high-density development. And as many speakers against or in favour of the motion and against the application have pointed out this evening, that's not necessarily a vice. Having a smaller number of car spaces is not necessarily a vice. And ultimately, people will make a decision about whether they buy an apartment with one or two car spaces on its own merits. It's got plenty of bicycle car parking, which, for goodness sake, is something that we've absolutely begged developers to consider, and it is in this development. Mayor, as I've said, I simply don't agree with the discretionary and performance criteria matters that have been raised as reasons for refusal. And I point out that while we might not be equal partners in the project, the reality is that Council owns the land and we needed to provide landowner consent for the application to proceed. And I just can't escape the idea that we don't like the way it looks. And frankly, if that's the argument, then fine, but we should never have provided landowner consent. I would have disagreed with it if we hadn't provided landowner consent, but it would have been a far better outcome than what we've got now, which frankly is devastating. This is an area where we want higher density housing. It's close to public transport, it's close to services, and it's in exactly the place that we asked for it to be. I've literally got 30 seconds.
You'll need an extension then. Moved by Councillor Midgley, the motion is that Councillor Street be given an extra 2 minutes. All those in favour?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Street.
As I've said, we've heard that it's the same bulk and size as what's already in the master plan. It's not the same use, but it does fill a need, and I'm disappointed that the outcome of all of this has been this report. I can't finish without saying the mover said he was pleased to move the motion, and I just couldn't help but think, what a thing to say. You know, disagree all you want and agree with the advice all you want, but at least be devastated that this is the outcome and that we've got 50 homes lost as a result.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Street has said quite a lot of what I wanted to say, particularly about the other buildings that are going to be built in the area, which are going to be taller and bulkier than what this is. So the scale will change. At the moment, it's going to stick out like a missing tooth, except the other way round, one great big tooth, maybe like in a six-year-old's gummy mouth with one tooth hanging down. But we've already approved a multi-storey building on the southern outlet at the McDonald's roundabout, which will be give some context to this one. It's not very far away at all, so it won't be the only high-rise there eventually in that very small vicinity. The other ones I know are further across. Now, people have been saying, oh, this will be good for older people. They can have their children in the playground and things. And these are not being built for older people. These are being built for everyone. And a three-bedroom apartment for children living in them is fine. I mean, they're going to have a playground right opposite to play in. It's a terrific place for families as well as older people. We don't need... I mean, even myself now, who's a car addict, can manage to get around if we only have one car. We don't all have two cars. We've just gone through to having our express buses coming from Kingston. People will not require two cars all the time. That's walking distance to the primary school, which is a great thing. You can just walk up and up Hutchins Street. I think people are sort of losing sight of the fact we need places for families to live as well as for older people. the one stickling point for me is provides for mixed use at ground level. Now, when we originally started talking about these plans, which seems to be like 100 years ago, we couldn't decide what sort of things could be in that area below them. The equivalent of shop houses in Malaysia or Asia, the business underneath and a house on top. And as far as I can remember, the only two things we came up with that they could have in there that would not be noisy would be accountants and seamstresses. Now, I don't think that there's going to be that many accountants and seamstresses wanting to go into that area. So I don't think it's a big deal. We already have a disconnected shopping area. We have Channel Court, we've got Kingston Town, we've got Merton Vale Circuit, we've got the Coles area. We've got little groups of shops everywhere. We surely don't want even more little shops. So I just think we need this accommodation. And if it needs to be tweaked a bit, I think it's a particularly ugly building, to tell you the truth. That's just me. That's nothing to do with the building as such. I think it meets enough of the performance criteria that we should let it through.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Before I ask Councillor Cordova to sum up, I wanted to just make my contribution. And I'll start by just reading the implementation strategy from the local area objectives and the desired future character statements of the urban mixed use zone, because I think that we need to bear that in mind when we are considering this project. And it says, the development model for this site should be exciting, vibrant and futuristic. It should fit within an overall planning framework that provides for an integrated and coordinated mix of uses. And clearly what we are considering tonight, the development application that has been submitted by Traders in Purple, does not meet that. And I think that most of us around this table accept that there will be continued infill development and needs to be within Kingborough. But it could be done better. It doesn't have to be a one-size-fits-all approach. And I know we're not allowed to have an opinion in relation to whether we like a building or not, and I spend a lot of time explaining to members of the community that when we sit here as a planning authority, it doesn't matter whether it's a big ugly purple building and we think it's nice and somebody else might think it's horrible. That's not what the debate is about. The debate is about whether it meets the requirements of the planning scheme or it doesn't. And I feel disappointed that what we have before us is a building that appears to be very similar to ones that the developer has done in other locations. It seems to me to be a one that hasn't been well thought out and that doesn't create excitement and that futuristic vision of what could be at an iconic site of the old Kingston High School. And so years ago when we considered the master plan, this was not the sort of building that I was envisaging would be on that site. I knew that there would be, that there would be a multi-storey building, but I didn't expect that it would, to all intents and purposes, look like, to my mind, a building that I stayed in on the Gold Coast in the 1980s, a hotel called the Hi Ho, and the name says it all. And it's not what I was expecting, and I don't think it's what the community expects. But having said that, we of course cannot take that into consideration, unfortunately, because this has to be assessed against the planning scheme. And that is why, for transparency and accountability, that we did ask an independent consultant to take on that task. And what we know from that is that the things like, and we've talked a lot about parking tonight, and yes, I believe the number of parking spots is an issue because I don't think Tasmanians have made the transition to taking public transport as much as they could. But we know that there are other issues with the parking. For example, the visitor parking spaces aren't wide enough. The parking aisle width is deficient. There is no turning facility for the visitor spaces. as well as there not being enough numbers of parking spots. So there's not just one issue about, oh, there's not enough parking spots. There are a range of issues around parking. Unfortunately were no sustainability reports or energy efficiency documentation that was provided with the development application. And so, as the report highlights, there is, unfortunately, minimal northerly orientation for this building. It's not taking advantage of being sited in a way that it otherwise could to maximise the northerly aspect, and quite a very pleasant northerly aspect towards Kunyani. The glazing doesn't have any shading, and there is not any reuse of stormwater. So it doesn't. This is a project that, amongst other things, does not have any level of energy efficiency or other environmental performance measures. And that's, to me, if we're creating something new for the future in Kingston, that is not what I envisaged, and I don't think it's what the community envisaged. And they certainly didn't envisage, as I've seen on social media, as some people have called it, the Empress Towers of Kingston or the Stainforth Court of Kingston. That's not necessarily what we want to have there. The height, for me, is an issue. It is 4.4 metres above the height, and that is something that is of great concern. So I am disappointed in what we have been presented with and what we've been asked to assess, and so I do support the independent consultant's recommendation that this development application be refused. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to thank my colleagues for this debate and thank the author and authoriser and all those who are working so hard to bring us good outcomes in Kingston Park. We're presented here with a once-in-a-generation opportunity. Whatever building goes into this space, it will stand for a generation. It's a once-in-a-generation opportunity to create a dynamic, accessible, sustainable space that attracts people to move to our CBD and attracts visitors to our new transformed and revitalised commercial centre. With higher density, yes, but with sensitivity. Something that supports both commercial enterprise and public open space with a human scale at ground level. Something that is sensitive to the topography and sensitive to the surroundings. Sustainable, aspirational, inclusive and welcoming. That's what it should be. We have a responsibility to ensure that whatever goes into this space, that it meets the Kingston Park specific area plan and meets the desired future character statements, including environmental sustainable design. So we need to ask ourselves, how does this proposal before us help us meet our objectives for Kingston Park? Will it complement the space or will it tower over it? Will it draw people in to enjoy a mixed-use offering on its ground floor, or will it be a slapdash multi-storey building that doesn't fit in? Does it meet the plan? Does it, as the plan says, ensure the use and development of the Kingston Park area and take advantage of its strategic location within central Kingston? Does it have a human scale? Will it make the park and the apartments feel like they're a cohesive, integrated part of a whole? Or will it instead feel like a block of apartments stuffed into an otherwise lovely area? Does it, as it says, create a dynamic and high-quality built environment that meets the long-term needs of the community by allowing for commercial activity supporting the growth of the Kingston Central area? Is it exciting, vibrant and futuristic? Will it detract from the rest of the area? Well, let's consider those words of the expert in the report at page 30. Quote, "The degree of non-compliance cannot be rectified by conditions. The application is recommended for refusal." And I recommend just that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. So the motion was moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox. The recommendation is on page 30. It is a recommendation for refusal with points A through to H as reasons for the refusal. All those in favour of the recommendation as printed?
Aye.
Aye. Against? Show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Fox and Reet. Those against? Councillors Street, Bastone and Westwood. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority of Council now adjourns at 6:39 p.m. If somebody could please let Councillor Gladewright know that the open session of Council will now recommence at 6:39 p.m. We're moving on now to petitions still being actioned. A report on the petition headed Upgrade to Car Park, Taruna Bowls and Community Club will be provided at a future council meeting. Petitions received in the last period at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Turning to page 93, officers' reports to council. We have requests for amendments to the urban growth boundary of the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy with a recommendation on page 96. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Mover and a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. And a seconder in Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, ma'am. So here we have a request for amendments to the urban growth boundary of the Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy, and essentially the recommendation is that we provide the General Manager with delegation to comment on requests from other Southern Tasmanian councils to amend the urban growth boundary of the Strelis, and that the standard response be as follows, that Council does not object to the processing of the application to amend the urban growth boundary, however, reserves the opportunity to comment on the proposal at a later stage after a full assessment of the application has been completed against the provisions of the RLUS1 guideline and the Minister for Planning's has indicated that there is sufficient information to proceed. The Southern Tasmanian Regional Land Use Strategy is far, far out of date, and we regularly present it in Council, not regularly, but every now and again it comes up that we have to make these determinations because all of the councils that are affected have to make these determinations. The problem is that we're making these determinations against a land use strategy that is really not fit for purpose. And as a result, you know, we've had these several requests over the past 2 years, and the refrain from many councillors around this table has been the same, which is that we need this strategy updated before we start making decisions that will ultimately have a long-term effect on Kingborough. And the real issue here is that the data is not available, that the modelling is not available, and if we say yes to something in Clarence, we don't know what implications that might have for us. So I welcome the debate, and I'll leave it there for now. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I'd like to acknowledge everything that Councillor Cordova has just said. I absolutely agree. I am fully aware that what this motion is actually seeking to do is to bring some efficiencies to the processes by bringing in a standard response, and I absolutely agree with that. Yes, I'm all for efficiencies. I do not, however, agree with what the standard response is. I really appreciate that councils across the state are experiencing increasing development pressure, and I'm really aware as well that there's a lack of available housing and particularly affordable housing in the Greater Hobart metropolitan area. However, I strongly believe that all good planning needs to be backed up by a really solid strategic plan. And we have a strategic plan. However, it is 11 years old. It's horrendously in need of some review. It says in the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993 that the Minister must keep all regional land use strategies under regular and periodic review. Now, I think that's a different matter, and it's important that perhaps we look at some lobbying in how we can apply some pressure in that area. I'm not sure if we can or not. But anyway, putting that aside, I do not agree with the standard response. I have sent Amanda a proposed amendment, hoping she can get it up on the screen there. I'm open, I'm not like brilliant at writing these amendments, so I'm really open to some discussion about it. It's basically, yes, let's go with a standard response to increase our efficiencies. However, what we would be saying is that we are objecting to the processing of applications to amend the urban growth boundary. What else can I say? I think it's really important that long-term settlement, there is a long-term settlement strategy for Greater Hobart, and that it's backed up by analysis, and yeah, everything that Councillor Cordova mentioned. So, how do you want me to proceed?
So, if Can I just clarify your amendment? I'm assuming then that your recommendation is... So if you turn to page 96, the recommendation starts with that Council provides the General Manager with delegation to comment on requests from other Southern Tasmanian Councils to amend the UGB of the Strelas, and that the standard response be as follows, and that the recommendation in here, your paragraph, replace that recommendation.
Yes,
can I just
correct.
Clarify that?
Yeah.
So that's what we're... Yeah,
sorry, just a procedural question.
Yes.
Maybe I'm reading it wrong. Isn't this essentially an alternative motion that should be foreshadowed if this motion is lost? Because doesn't it... This amendment essentially reverses the motion, which is the complete opposite of the intention of the motion. So isn't it better to foreshadow a motion and then do it again later?
Take some advice. Everyone's nodding, but do you want to just say something to confirm
Sorry.
That?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, Councillor Cordova, that's a correct point.
Okay.
Really, can I move to discuss first, so that, or do I move it and then we discuss it?
We can't move to discuss after we've started debate on a matter. That door has closed, okay. I believe. Is that correct? Or can somebody move to discuss at any time? Sorry, we'll just seek some clarification. I know we're starting to sound like an episode of Yes Minister or Utopia. I haven't memorised the meeting procedures regulations yet.
Yes, can.
You can. Okay, there you go. We can. Okay, so you'd like to move a motion to discuss.
You can't discuss the procedural motion, but you can have the procedural motion to discuss.
So I can put the amendment. Is that what I do first?
No, you said you wanted to discuss it. Discuss the actual original motion. Is that what you wanted to achieve?
Yeah, sure. Let's discuss the original motion.
Well, we can keep discussing it as we are actually... Well, so we kind of are discussing it. This is where we get started. It's sounding more and more like Utopia and Yes Minister. So we are actually debating the original motion at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether you want to extend that process to move a procedural motion to discuss it, which then means that we can have a long discussion about it, then go back to keep... talking about it as the substantive motion.
Do that if you've got a mover and a second of the original motion.
Yeah, the original motion takes precedence over everything else, but it's not part of the standard procedural motion, but it is a procedural motion.
Can I put the amendment?
No, that's the problem.
It's not an amendment because it's changing the whole... Yeah. So you can foreshadow, and if the vote's lost...
All right, I'll foreshadow, please.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Further speakers? Councillor Midgley?
Thank you. I have a question in regards to, at the last council meeting, from my recollection, the Clarence...
Skylands
request that we refused that one. That doesn't feel like it aligns with the motion that's put tonight, so therefore how did council officers come to this decision?
Dr. Stevenson.
Thank you, through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Midgley. Council has not always taken a consistent approach to these requests. So sometimes we have supported and sometimes we have not. And that has been for various reasons, including a lack of modelling being provided. So the reference to the RLUS1 guideline is the steps that the government have laid out. They're not legislative steps, they're a policy step to try and bridge the gap between the lack of review of the Strelas and the legislation. And one of those steps is that a council wanting to make an urban growth boundary change has to ask all the other councils in the region, and they have to provide the modelling of the impacts on all the other councils in the region. And what we're finding is that's really too big a request when you might not actually get through to the next step. And so from an officer perspective, because we may well get put into a position at some point, I don't know, where we want to ask for an urban growth boundary amendment. And what I didn't, from an office perspective, we didn't want to close off that choice to us either. What this does is say that procedural non-legislative list that the government have come up with is very meaningless, and we don't see the point of doing all the work and bringing it to council every time, because ultimately the Tasmanian Planning Commission will require that information, do their formal assessment under legislation, and council will have an opportunity at that point to make comment about the impact for us of an urban growth boundary change in another municipality. And so we were really thinking this allowed the process to continue without the unnecessarily onerous steps that have been suggested by the State Government's Planning Policy Unit. I would feel very uncomfortable in having a delegation where we said no. As an acting GM, I wouldn't want to put the general manager in that position, and in that case, I would suggest we would be bringing them back to council. This is giving us the delegation to say, look, go ahead, and we'll consider it at the right formal point in time, and we're not going to do the busy work that's currently required of officers in bringing a report to council. So that's the thrust of the recommendation in this report.
Thank you. And what about other councils? Where do they sit in regards to this, and have they put forward such an amendment, or have we got kind of like a tally in regards to where our decision that was made at the last council meeting, what did other councils do? I know I've spoken to a few different councillors and they absolutely are in agreement with Councillor Glade-Wright's proposed motion. So it's very confusing as to know where to sit, and with the Stralis 11 years in, you know, needing review, where is the impetus to actually make that to happen rather than having to make these decisions?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Because it's not a legislative requirement, councils haven't been entirely consistent in the way they've approached this, and some councils don't have a formal contemplation of this question at their council
formal
meeting.
Formal contemplation of this question. It sounds very mindful.
They don't take the requests necessarily to the council ahead of it hitting the TPC process. So it's not been consistent. The decision-making has not been consistent, because what has been consistent is that councils have found the process too difficult and flawed.
So has this been discussed at LGAT meetings, and why can't there be a consistent approach? I guess it would be hard to with the 29 councils, but it would be good to see a consistent approach with this, because it still feels like, it hasn't got the big picture in mind, and where, you know, we might need to put forward a boundary, you know, that, Kingston's vision in that around our change, that we might require one day. Like, are we doing it because of that, or, what does LGAT stand on this?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. There have been discussions, and I recently attended a General Manager's workshop of LGAT where I did raise this matter. And there's also been discussion through the Strategic Planners Network. There are two points, probably. One is that there is absolute consistency across the sector in advocating for the speedy resolution of the review of the urban growth, the regional urban growth boundary, the regional land use strategies, which contain the urban growth boundaries, and the government have committed to that and have commenced preliminary work, and that includes some modelling that they are commissioning, the considerations coming through the Greater Hobart planning and so forth. So it's early days, but the commitment is there, and the early work has commenced. At an officer level, I shared our once this was in our council agenda, I shared this document with a number of Southern GMs who expressed an interest in taking a similar approach.
Thank you. Next I had Councillor Street, and then Councillor Cordova must have a question.
Yep.
Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I was going to make a more significant contribution, but Dr Stevenson has just said it all, basically. And I know that people are probably sick of hearing me talk about this because I say the same thing every time. Strelitz, dreadfully out of date, huge problem, needs to be fixed. For goodness sake, can't believe how many times I've been down this path. But in terms of managing staff workload and what's appropriate in the circumstances, and also a bit of a philosophical objection on my part to standing in the way of other councils and their amendment requests without proper reasons and process, I think this is a really good idea, and I thank staff for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova with a question.
Thank you, Mayor. My question, I would like the state government to progress Strelitz as fast as possible, but I don't want to be reckless in doing so. So even though we want to force the government's hand, we don't want to burn the whole place down. So, for example, were there to be a public housing development, if this decision tonight would slow social or community housing from happening or delay it, then I think that that would be a problem. So my question is, what is the necessary time frame for council to deal with this delegation? For example, could we defer it tonight, get a workshop on it to actually think about what the pros and cons are in a reasoned way, and also think about what are the potential risks of us doing one way or the other? Because as I say, I wouldn't want to be the spanner in the works that destroys a social housing program. Having said that, Councillor Street is exactly right that we need to really make sure that this is that the review is actually expedited. So that's my question, is about deferral. Is that a good idea?
Before I let Dr Stevenson answer part of that, if I can just say from the last Greater Hobart Mayor's Forum, I got the impression from the new Minister for Planning, Minister Ferguson, that they are keen to progress the Strelitz review. So I felt, after that last meeting, some comfort that there was movement happening in that space. Dr Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. In terms of a timing imperative, there is none. We have no request before us at the moment, and we could certainly combine it with some other planning matters in a workshop.
Reading the room, is there an appetite to defer and get a workshop? No. Yes and no. Well, I'm happy to move to defer.
Okay, that's a procedural motion. Okay, do I have a seconder for that, Councillor? So we have a procedural motion that the matter be deferred. It's moved by Councillor Cordova. It's seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour of the deferral? Is Councillors Cordova and Midgley. All those against? Is Councillors Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. So the motion to defer is lost. We're back on the substantive motion. Are there any further speakers? Just very briefly, I'll just make a contribution. Look, I was happy with this recommendation once I understood that it wasn't excluding council from making a decision at some point in relation to requests to change the urban growth boundary. I had to sort of read it a couple of times to make sure that the intent was that it was more about streamlining the process for our planning staff, who we know are already facing significant pressures in terms of their workload. This would just give a blanket in principle, but then any applications would come back at a time when there is sufficient information. And I think that's probably something that's got lost a little bit in the debate tonight. The report is very clear about the fact that there is not sufficient information that's provided at this early stage before it goes to the TPC for our staff to recommend to us to vote for it or against it. And that is really significant because then effectively we're making a decision based on only a small amount of information. The councils that are making the requests don't have, until they don't have the ability to have the resources to get all that extra information before it, you know, they get in principle support from councils to go to the TPC. So it's a bit of a, it is a little bit of a chicken and egg, but I guess what we're trying to do is make the best out of the situation here in terms of the workflow for our staff, whilst also leaving the opportunity, once we have additional information, if the TPC comes back and says, look, okay, you know, this can go forward, what do you think, before we make our final determination. So I just wanted to add that, because I didn't want anybody to think that we were abrogating our responsibility in any way by delegating it to the general manager. But as councillors, each of these will come back to us for a final determination at some point. So, Councillor Midgley, do you have a question?
I do have a question, thank you. So I can't recall anything coming back to us, has it, in regards to the decisions we've made about urban growth boundaries since I've been on council, but I can't remember
it's
everything.
It's a very lengthy process, each of them. Dr Stevenson.
It would be, through you, Mayor, it would be fair to say this is not a, urban growth boundary amendments are not a high priority for the Tasmanian Planning Commission, given they have to finish bringing in the new Tasmanian planning scheme. So none that I'm aware of have progressed any further at this point in time.
Okay, are there any further speakers? If not, I will ask Councillor Cordova to sum up. No? All right, I will put the motion. It's the original motion as printed on page 93 of the... Sorry, the recommendations
sorry,
on page 96.
Sorry, do I
96.
Get to move my...
No, because we have... Yeah, if this gets lost, yeah.
Right.
Because you're moving a totally different recommendation, we can't consider it as an amendment because it's an alternative. It's a complete... It's flipping the recommendation.
Okay.
So we need to put this to a vote first. If this is lost, then you're able to move that motion.
Okay.
Okay, where was it? So it's moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Street. It's the original recommendation as printed on page 96. All those in favour? Against? I'll have a show of hands. In favour is Councillors Cordova, Fox, Street, Bastone, Westwood and Reet. Noes against, Councillors Midgley and Gladright. The motion is carried, which unfortunately means you cannot... We'll take you through it after the meeting, sorry. Moving now to page 98, pedestrian crossing at Beach Road, Kingston Beach, with a recommendation on page 102. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. Moved, Councillor Midgley, seconded, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So, noting this report, and thanks staff for this report, was in response to a motion put forward by Councillor Gladright in response to community conversations about pedestrian safety in the Kingston Beach precinct, especially ease and safety when crossing Beach Road. Noting that there has been a lot of work in the space in regards to sets of traffic counters were installed, pedestrian counts were undertaken in November. There's details around the location of vehicles and number of traffic counts. Note there's no cycling in there. Maybe they missed them. In regards to motorist speed limit and all sorts of data and things like that. Noting that there is a bid of $30,000 to be submitted for consideration in budget deliberations for a 2023 financial year to investigate suitable options for traffic calming in the Kingston Beach precinct, and a further bid of $150,000 be submitted for consideration to implement stage one. We know things take time at council. We can't have an immediate crossing happen, and I'm sure there's probably some community frustration in regards to the processes around this. And sorry, laughing because I often have to talk about these things as how council and governments work. Think of Stralis, 11 years. A couple of questions. The $30,000 for the independent consultant and in regards to the LATM sort of investigation, is that an independent consultant that will be doing that? Is that why there's that amount there?
Mr. Reed.
Through you, Madam Mayor. I would anticipate that $30,000 was for an external independent consultant to do that, undertake that latent review. Most smaller studies might be done internally by council staff without that funding commitment, for that funding commitment, so there'd be an external consultant involved.
Thank you. It just seems like such a big amount of money for quite a small area, when it feels like we've done quite a lot of the research and things like that ourselves. I guess that's just what the cost is. Is that right? I guess
yes.
It is.
We don't have the benefit of Mr. Reeve here this evening.
No, I noted that.
So I'm predicting what he would say, yes.
So really, the independent consultant will pretty much do more investigations before making a treatment decision to ensure that it's done, as it says, in the most effective way and place. So that's really what we need to investigate further. I did a bit of research actually on the LATM. Sorry, I forget what the acronym stands for, if someone could remind me. And I noted that some councils actually have policies in regards to this LATM to actually decide when and whether that should be implemented. Do we have a policy in regards to that at all, to make these decisions about the implementation of the LATM?
Mr. Reed is indicating no, but feel free to say that out loud. Mr. Reed. Somebody turn their light off, please. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor. No, is the answer. We do not have a policy.
Thank you. Sorry, I just did a bit of a Google around LATM, and especially in regards to a project that I worked on at the City of Hobart around Hill Street, and they put some trial of different pedestrian crossings, wombat crossings actually, to trial in regards to the community using them. And I'm just like wondering the process in regards to then making this decision versus a consultant versus putting in some sort of a trial, which we've kind of identified where the area could be. So how do we then, you know, and it felt like the LATM policy helped in actually making that decision as to whether to go down that path or not.
Mr. Reed.
Through you, Madam Mayor. I've also done a bit of research on councils that have similar policies on items. Most of the ones I've seen don't go into the detail as to what treatments and where. They would simply indicate whether a site might be explored further, but the process of the later investigation would certainly look at those, I guess, the feasibility issues of putting in temporary arrangements to see how they would work, or simply modelling from an, I guess, a desktop exercise to work out what the most appropriate treatment might be. Kingston Beach has had previous implementations of various latent type treatments, and the speed humps mounds along Osborne Esplanade, for instance. So this study, I guess, would probably piggyback onto what's already been done, but look at Kingston Beach as a holistic treatment exercise rather than just simply focusing on Beach Road, that might then be inconsistent with pushing traffic down Windsor Street or other streets in the area. So that one solution doesn't necessarily detract from what you're trying to achieve in another street.
Great. Thank you, and thanks for that, getting the acronym right there. So that, I mean, it's good to know that it's not just zoned in that space, but it's looking at the whole treatment for the whole precinct, so that's really great. Thank you.
Thank you. Further speakers, Councillor Fox and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. During my time as the Chair of the Access Committee, and that goes back about 25 years, this was the real perennial, and I think it's especially with an ageing population and with a lot of people who've got visual problems, I think it's really important that we don't lose sight of having this crossing on Beach Road. But I would like to ask that it's not just one crossing.
Sorry, keep going. I'd
like to ask that we consider more than one crossing, because obviously there's a childcare centre on this road further up beyond the hall, where a lot of parents are crossing the road to collect their children or deliver their children. Then there are a lot of hall users also at the Kingston Beach Hall who want to go across the road to have a coffee afterwards, and going and coming and going. We've got the obvious place where the car park is and the pizza shop opposite and other shops. And then we've got the beachfront hotel where people are crossing at the intersection close to the beach from the corner shop across to the hotel. And I noticed in the report on page 100 that 80% of the people crossing Beach Road are jaywalking, or in other words, not using a specific crossing point. So that's why I raised all those one, two, at least four other locations that maybe we should consider. And we can't possibly have four pedestrian crossings, but to be modifying or street calming the road to such an extent that multiple crossings are safe and are possible. I think that to me is more important than having one specific area that is everybody's channeled to, but it might not be a practical reality in terms of the activities that are happening along that street. So I'm just wanting to get that on the record. I do support the motion, but I think it's not just a matter of one pedestrian crossing, but traffic calming along the entire section of that street. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Before I go to Councillor Westwood, it's just something that you said triggered me to remember that I, at the start of the meeting, I failed to declare a conflict of interest in relation to this issue because my partner has a business on Beach Road where people cross the road. So I'll place that on the record now and fill out the form, but I don't intend to not participate in the debate, which kind of just makes all that a little pointless, but I need to say it anyway. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I don't support this recommendation. The issue of pedestrians crossing Beach Road and Osborne Esplanade has been around since I was elected to council in late 2018. I've been talking about this. It's been a known issue. We had a notice of motion requesting staff investigate road safety issues involving pedestrians crossing Beach Road, Kingston Beach, and report back to council with traffic data and recommended solutions. We have, from what I can see in the report, three recommended solutions. The primary objective of the LATM, which I think we just had... Local Area Traffic Management Scheme. The primary objective will be to install visual cues to calm traffic at the entry points to Kingston Beach, to the Kingston Beach precinct. That's one option, possible solution. It is plausible that a raised platform could be installed at the Beach Road pedestrian crossing point in the vicinity of the public car park. Plausible that a raised platform could be extended to incorporate the Windsor Street Junction. There are some jurisdictions in Australia that are now installing raised priority crossings which give priority to pedestrians and or cyclists by through the use of giveaway signs as opposed to a zebra crossing. And then the recommendation that Council postpones the decision to modify the existing pedestrian crossing facility at Beach Road until the LATM investigation is completed and the Council prioritises the key intersections and pedestrian crossing point on Beach Road for implementation of Stage 1 works in the 2022-23 Capital Works Program. I just think, why? Why are we now getting this recommendation in 2022, that we postpone a decision, that we prioritise key intersections and pedestrian crossing points on Beach Road. I don't think that it's good enough, so I don't support it.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Councillor Midgley, then Councillor Cordova. No, was it the other way around? Beg your pardon. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Midgley.
Sure, thank you, Mayor. The issue here, and I totally agree with Councillor Westwood that this is a known issue and that this has been raised by community members for a very long time now. I want to raise the point, and councillors indeed, I want to raise the point that we need to separate whether this is about safety or whether it's about convenience. And I posit, and I think we all do, that this is unequivocally about safety. As you can see in the report, it says that at pedestrian location 2, I'm looking now at the top of page 101, most pedestrians were able to cross the road without any significant delay, with 8 seconds being the longest possible wait time. Then in the next bit, it says that no pedestrians encountered any delays in crossing Osborne Esplanade, with 4 seconds being the longest wait time. And then there's all kinds of interesting things in the report that talk about how at the top of Beach Road, more than half of the traffic is actually going above the speed limit, so there's some issues there. And then also that people are, as was raised by Councillor Midgley, people are crossing, you know, essentially jaywalking, right? So I think we need to be clear about what our goal here is, and it is to make sure that people crossing Beach Road are able to do so in a safe way and to make sure that it's universally accessible for those people who are crossing And so I kind of wanted to raise that point. Now, in terms of the Local Area Traffic Management Scheme, the LATEM, I am particularly interested in 4.20. I'd like to know more, so this is a question. There are some jurisdictions in Australia that are now installing raised priority crossings, which give priority to pedestrians and cyclists by use of give-way signs as opposed to zebra crossings. So my question is, what do these look like? I wasn't able to find, my keyword search was the wrong thing, but where are these used, what do they look like, and how many metres of road potentially would we be thinking about raising to make it safe?
Thank you. Mr. Reid.
Through you, Madam Mayor. The jurisdictions that I've been advised that currently are implementing or trialling those treatments are in Queensland. I haven't been able to identify any particular sites or locations. I did a bit of Googling and came up blank, which is unusual. I anticipate from the description that it was simply replicating a standard zebra pedestrian crossing, but rather than having pedestrian signs, you're actually having a give-way sign there, which forcibly cars are probably more likely to see and obey rather than the current pedestrian crossing arrangements which aren't favourably considered, certainly in Tassie and generally across most of Australian jurisdictions. They seem to be going away from that as a standard treatment, though it does have a place. So the latent process, I guess, is effectively to try and explore those options and come up with not necessarily one particular point or one particular location, but what treatment will achieve those objectives which you're talking about, which is effectively traffic safety and making the environment safe for people to cross either at a particular location or generally. So if you look at Elizabeth Street Mall, a 30-kilometre speed limit, not a crossing in sight other than the intersections, but people cross randomly across the street in safety because the speed environment is so low. Beach Road could be a similar treatment. So whilst I, looking at the report, or the recommendation, A, simply talks about undertaking that study, B, presupposes the outcome of the study, which is the crossing point on Beach Road. It may not be the crossing point on Beach Road.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I'm going to conclude my remarks, Mayor, by saying that there are two things going on here. One is that people are crossing everywhere, which is why 4.18 is so important, that we need to introduce those visual cues and traffic calming to make sure that wherever you cross, it is safe to cross because the cars know that people are crossing everywhere. But what's fundamentally important is that people living with, let's say, somebody with a visual impairment or elderly or frail people, that there is a spot where they are able to cross in safety, where they know that this is a spot that you can cross in safety. So there's two things going on here. One is, much like Elizabeth Street Mall, you've got people walking around everywhere, and we want to encourage that because it means people are going to stop, stick, stay and spend. They're going to visit all the businesses. They're going to wander to the beach. They're going to, enjoy an ice cream. That's great, but we also need to make sure that it's safe for vulnerable people crossing as well. That's why, even though I do share the disappointment or frustration that was expressed by Councillor Westwood that, we've been waiting a long time to fix this and why are we still waiting, I do think that because we have to do it right, it has to be part of a holistic framework, which is why we need the LATEM to be thoroughly investigated. So I'm not prepared to throw this baby out with the bathwater just because we've been waiting too long. I think the recommendation, though it's... these things do take time to make sure that we get it right, and so that's why I'll be supporting the recommendation. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you. Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. As a few councillors have asked about how it's been discussed for many years, I have a question about the time frame. What is our time? I know it's in the next financial year, but can it be in the first... can the consultant perhaps be engaged prior to the, as soon as the budget gets passed, can we look at engaging a consultant and then perhaps can it be completed, how can we push it to move it along as a real priority?
Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor, I might take that one a little bit on notice, as much as I normally get involved in the here's a set of plans, deliver it, rather than pushing the buttons to make it happen. I would certainly suggest, though, that it has received a fair amount of political attention. It would be high on the list of projects to proceed. I did have a chat with the roads engineer earlier today, to say, well, how could it progress, at least in the selection, the engagement process, the lining up the ducks in anticipation of budgetary approval, to at least give it an early shot to, you know, cross the line running, so to speak, come 1st of July.
Thank you. I'm just wondering, Mayor, if perhaps we need to put that in the motion, noting somewhere on Blackmans Bay there was a timeline, I've forgotten the road, it wasn't Burwood Drive, maybe it was Burwood Drive, in regards to there was a time, a date put on it to make sure that that did be a priority, and I'm wondering if it would help some people, some other councillors, if a date was put on that to ensure that it was a priority project. So I'll just leave that one there.
And I think what Mr Reeve was saying is that we'd have to take some advice from Mr Reeve. So that's very confusing, isn't it, Mr Reeve and Mr Reeve, about, you know, we can't, it would be very difficult for us to just pull a random date out of the air and try and commit the engineering department and any consultants and any contractors after that to the works, given the processes that we have to go through. Would that be correct, Mr Reed? Yes.
Thank you. And another question in regards to Councillor Westwood about the 4.18 on page 101, 4.19 and 4.20, with the fact that there has been identification of what could be installed. In regards to, let's look realistically, that this might not happen, be completed for another year. Is there, like, what then makes projects, say, such as Hill Street in West Hobart, where they had the trial of the Wombat Crossing and then they implemented it, like, where is that decision-making in that when we've actually got a few identifications of actually what could happen? How could we not, like, the roundabout, that was a trial. You know, how could we not trial one of these suggestions that we've already come to a conclusion that would be good? How could we not trial that and then kind of do the study and progress from there?
Dr. Stevenson.
I think the difference between the Main Street roundabout and these are a list of possible treatments. We had engineering advice in relation to the roundabout on the Main Street before we trialled it, so we actually had commissioned expert advice. So what this report is seeking is that we get that expert advice, which may then suggest some trials as part of that. But I think in trying to say, oh, there's four things there, why don't we just try them, you wouldn't try all of them. So you need to get that expert advice about what are the most likely to have success, because if you look at those paragraphs, there's curb narrowings, raised thresholds, slower speeds, platforms at the pedestrian crossing, and the different type of giveaway crossing. You wouldn't try them all. So we need that expert advice. My understanding is that while these are presented as two pieces of work, the $30,000 for the LATM and the $150,000, they really are synchronous pieces of work. So one is to do the design, and then the $150,000 is to implement. And I, without having done the design work, we don't even know whether it's the type of works that might need to go to tender, or, you know, so as to your question on timeframes before, we really do need the expert design, because what the data was showing is that there isn't just one issue, to Councillor Cordova's points. And therefore, there may be a number of possible treatments. And by looking at it holistically, all of what is needed would be recommended and implemented through that implementation phase.
Councillor Bladerat.
Thank you. I support the investigation, the LATM, happening before we indeed decide what to do. But can we expedite that at all, please? Can we put in there that, like, quarter one, rather than picking a date, can we pin it down to quarter one?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, I have no idea of the availability of the consultants. We could certainly aim for that, but we're going to be dependent on being able to engage that
of
expertise.
Of course. Well, that is just understood. I'm not very good at moving amendments, but, you know.
Through you, Mayor, I would say that the sentiment and mood of the council is well and truly noted. I don't think you need to put a specific date in. We officers understand the desire to progress this quickly, and I will certainly convey that to Mr. Reeve and relevant staff.
Is that enough?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Further speakers, I just wanted to say a couple of things in relation to this. Like others around the table, I'm quite frustrated about this because I remember, like Councillor Westwood does, our discussions around this back in 2018 and getting traffic counts done at that stage and getting the results of them and those showing how many people were exceeding the speed limits at various parts of Beach Road. And here we find ourselves in a situation 4 years later where nothing has been done. And I know that there are many people around this table who have been raising it consistently. And that is because the community want a safer way to cross Beach Road. End of story. So I am pretty frustrated about this, like others. And you only have to go down there on a warm summer's day where there's lots of activities going on at the beach or at the pubs or something at the hall and seeing... In fact, I was a bit confused that it said that only 80% of people were jaywalking because I don't know how you not jaywalk there because there is no crossing, so I don't know what the other 20% of people are doing to get across the road because... whether they're going all the way down to Osborne Esplanade and going across that way, which I've... So that statistic I found quite curious because there is no way to get across the road except to just walk without any coverage of lights or a pedestrian crossing. There are a lot of elderly people who, during the daytime, visit businesses along that area. There's a podiatrist there now and... you know, that demographic is an older demographic who use that business and the majority of them park across the road. And a number of them have mobility devices. There isn't parking directly outside that business either, so they have to park across the road if they can't get something around the corner. So there are a range of issues here, and I really hope, and I take some comfort in Mr. Reed's words, that... we have all clearly expressed ourselves this evening about the desire to see something done because it would be a terrible tragedy if something occurred there when we had spent 4 years of raising it and nothing being actioned. So I think that that message has quite got through from all the contributions tonight, so I thank people for that and ask... Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
Just thank you, everybody, for your contributions, and I look forward to hearing about when the consultant is engaged and actions taken.
Thank you. So I'll put the motion. It's as moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Cordova, with a recommendation on page 102. All those in favour? Aye. Against?
No.
I'll have a show of hands, please. In favour is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Bastone and Reet. Those against, Councillor Westwood. The motion is carried. It's just prior to 7:30, so we might have like a really short sort of comfort break. So, and be back as soon as we can, please, in 5 or 6 minutes would be appreciated. Thank you. All right. Welcome back. Thank you for your patience while we had a short comfort break. The open session of council is resuming at 7:36. PM, we are now at the item Love Living Locally 2023 with a recommendation on page 105. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Gladright. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I feel great to move this recommendation in this report. It's something that I have been raising during budget discussions and different grant round discussions, and it hasn't just come off an idea that I've had. It's come from members of the community that have met with me and suggested ideas for different events that they'd like to run at council, and looking at our grant round and looking at our activation of the hub, and noting how big an impost it is really for staff to actually put on events. But I also have to just share a little bit of moment, because Love Living Locally takes me back to 11 years ago when I was at home with my toddlers and first stepped back out into the world, it felt like, to a council event here that was a sustainable living kind of forum. And there were about six of us who put our hands up to be involved in different sustainability initiatives, and mine was around growing food. Had lots more time for that back then. And then we formed the Sustainable Living in Kingborough. And out of that Sustainable Living in Kingborough, the group won a community award. We did a lot of awareness raising around waste, and I was very active around organising different growing food ideas and having events and visiting gardens and things like that. And then in that time when you're, you know, at home and those moments when your kids are sleeping, I had this idea of a festival that celebrated all things great about living in Kingborough, and had the fantastic Mel Staples, a community services officer who's still with us today, and she's great at coming up with names, and so she came up with the name The Love Living Locally. And we had the event outside here in the council centre, and at one of those pinch-yourself kind of moments that it was full with community, and it was a great celebration of young artists and different food producers and different people showing showcases, Kirsten Bacon demonstrating cooking and all sorts of fantastic things. And as time went on, personally my role in that kind of diminished as I went back to work and had the toddlers as well. And then the Lions Club got involved and different members of the Sustainable Living in Kingborough. And then council really took this event on, and we created, the hub was built, and so then the event moved to the hub, and it was so fantastic to see this really loved, well-supported event. And I note that Councillor Lewis, who isn't here tonight, really loves the event and would love to see us keep Love Living Locally. But I do believe, and I support the recommendations here, that it is time to look at a bit of a change. There is a significant, or $10,000 towards this event. I note that an event of that calibre, if you've ever organised an event, like, it's months in planning. Our council staff have, in the community services area, have given the role in actually activating the hub and bringing life to the hub, and there is only a small number of staff in community services to do all of that, and to take them away to then work on this Love Living Locally event for like 3 months is quite a big thing. So I love the recommendation, this motion, that it is a trial to see how it goes. Hopefully we do see some people being inspired to create an event. I know the dog walker group has talked about having like a dog's day out or something like that. Don't think anyone in Tasmania has a Southern Tasmanian tomato festival. There's so many ideas that could happen. So I really...
She hasn't got to the big pumpkins yet.
No, I've just thought about tomatoes. I thought, no one's doing tomatoes. Look at the garlic festival. That has taken off. And I just think, ooh, tomatoes. The tomatoes could be the thing. And the thing is, it's not set in concrete. It's a trial. So let's give it a go, give it a trial, see how it goes. And then if we need to move back to the Love Living Locally concept, well, you know, that can happen. But I think hopefully we can support this trial. We've got a space. Let's look at how we can activate the hub and not put that impost for council staff to work on a single event for a couple of months of the year.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
I enjoyed listening to Councillor Midgley on the history of this, and I think it is really important to recognise that this is one of the things I think that council over the years has done really well, and I personally would like to see it continue, probably like Councillor Watts, who isn't here, because I think
this is where our skills lie. This is what council staff in this department do really well. They've got the experience and the expertise. And I think by having it organised by council just puts it above the level of a community organisation doing it on their own. And I don't want to take it away from the community organisations, but I do think this is, they can help, they can participate, and they can be an extension of what council organises. And by having council organising it, I think it allows participation of smaller ethnic groups that don't have the resources and the skills to organise the event themselves. You get a wider range of participants, and it doesn't discriminate any against anybody, and the program can be tailored towards other people, people who express an interest in participating, for example, service groups. And the way that it's been run, I think, has the proof is in the pudding. It has been successful. It has been. It's grown from strength to strength. The participation rate has been amazing. And just because COVID's got in the way, that is really the only thing that's changed in that balance. I think it's disappointing that we're not embracing the Love Living Locally concept the way it's always been run, and that we were and are on a winner, and I think we should stick with the winner. I don't support having people putting in for grants in order to organise something. I think this is a core project that council can take to include the community, to make it more inclusive, and to make people feel as though they belong and they're proud of their community and can offer to contribute, not just by organising something for themselves, but to participate in the bigger picture and get a feeling of belonging. It's all about belonging. It's not about organising other people to do something. That's something that Council's Community Services has done so well and should continue to do. So I'm afraid I do speak against the motion, and I would like to see it continue, and I'd be foreshadowing that if this motion is lost. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I echo the sentiments of Councillor Fox. I really think we do Love Living Locally quite well. Certainly the last time I went pre-COVID, it was a really wonderful event. I don't have a strong opinion either way, so I am glad to see that it is the recommendation is for a trial. My concerns predominantly relate to the risk to the community services team giving up control of running one big council event, to help other people organise multiple smaller events, where we won't necessarily have as much control or as much say over what the event involves or who's included, but that team may still be required to do quite a bit of work to ensure those events are successful. So I think the risk is that council's in-kind contribution through the person hours from that community services team is a bit unknown. So that's where my hesitation lies. I guess I've got an open mind here. I was listened very carefully to Councillor Midgley because I know this is an area that you're very passionate about. But in saying that, I'll be interested to hear the contribution from others because I do think that Love Living Locally is a very successful and very well known and very well run event. So I'll reserve my decision at this point in time.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Then I've got Councillor Bastone.
I love Living Locally. I think it's a very successful model. I think we run it exceptionally well. I like the fact that you can have a group of dancers there from India teaching everyone how to do it. It's not an Indian festival. They're part of our community. They love living locally. There's another group with people who are doing craft and things who could never run a festival on their own. But they're all part of our local community. And I think it just shows, Love Living Locally shows the breadth of what we've got in our community. By dividing it up into small groups, I think we run the risk of people not necessarily attending it. Now, I don't know, I'll probably use my husband as an example, but if I said to him, oh, there's a craft festival on, he wouldn't come. He would not be interested in coming. But he's actually quite interested in looking at it when he comes to see everything else that's there. So I think the love living locally appeals to more people, and more people get to see what's going on in our community. I would be very hesitant about having it divided up into groups. And just on the tomato festival, the botanical gardens do a tomato one already, and you can get free tomato plants from them during their tomato festival. So I think we won't have tomatoes. Thank you.
Excellent infomercial. Thank you. Councillor Midgley, do you have a question?
I have a question, yes. So in regards to just, I guess this really comes down to the in discussion with staff regarding them continuing Love Living Locally or versus a model that is proposed in the recommendation, and what were their feelings around that?
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Westwood, I think the staff are very open-minded. There are pros and cons to both approaches. The feedback I had was that Love Living Locally had become quite enormous and probably stretched well beyond its $10,000 budget last event, and in fact staff had to engage a project officer to help for a period of time to run that event, so it was bigger than the resources that we had available. That was at its pinnacle. Obviously we've not been able to run an event, so I think there is an opportunity to rethink. So they weren't opposed to trying something different. I think the conversation around the risks around loss of control, we definitely talked about that, because it can be challenging managing expectations, and certainly the intent of the two $5,000 grants isn't just to hand over money, it would be to provide support to get those events off the ground, and hopefully then they become sustainable. So I think there was no clear winner, probably, but certainly a willingness and openness to trying something different, given that we've been in a hiatus period.
Thank you. And at the last Love Living Locally festival, and several Love Living Locally, they've definitely done feedback from stakeholders in regards to the vision of where the event would go, because there was so many microcosms, as the councillors have said tonight. My question's just completely gone from me. Sorry.
It's all right, we can come back to you.
Oh, the feedback. Yes, sorry, my brain just went there. The feedback. Do we take into account any of that feedback from those festivals in regards to this decision as well? Because I know it was to continue or to not, or to change it, or that sort of a thing.
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, while the team may have discussed that, in the feedback they gave me, they didn't reference any feedback from previous participants in the Live Loving Locally, so I don't have that level of detail available, sorry.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a really important discussion to be having, and it's wonderful to have a discussion about, you know, how we bring our community together. Councillor Westwood raised a really salient point, which is that the impost on staff resources and time for these new events is a completely unknown quantity. And whilst I completely recognise, you know, there's obviously that Love Living Locally has essentially grown too big and is too successful, it's a victim of its own success in terms of the impost on staff resources. But it is still unknown very much what the new events will take. But also I think not only is there that unknown quantity, but it's also unknown how representative those other events might be. So we've heard from Councillor Bastone, it was very eloquently put that because it's this great melting pot of all different kinds of things, that's why it's interesting and that's why it's attractive to so many different people. If it becomes a very specific event for one interest group, how do we know? And it does indeed say that there's a risk that if Love Living Locally doesn't return, whatever replaces it will have a reduced profile and lower interest levels. I've kind of paraphrased that, actually. It's referring to Love Living Locally. But anyway, you see my point. What my question, I think, is what is going to be the criteria, or can we have some more clarity around the criteria for what those events might be that are for which we will provide the event support?
Well, I don't think we know until such time as we...
Yep. Yes.
Dr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mayor, we didn't want to do that work if there was no support for the general concept. We'd be happy to bring some more detail back if this moves to the next phase.
Thank you. So because there's no shortlist, we don't really know what interest there is, and we don't know the specificity surrounding the event. So in the hypothetical example raised by Councillor Bastone, if this becomes a craft fair, it might have a very different level of interest as opposed to if it was... the Foo Fighters playing in concert, and we're providing event support for that, as an example.
That woke a few people up.
Better than tomatoes, I'll tell you that. So anyway, the loss of control is really important, and the loss of inclusivity, I think, is a real risk as well. Having said all of that, and I am happy to try something different, and the reason I'm happy to try something different is that what we might try in this pilot may turn out to be a disaster. But it might turn out to be amazing. And if we don't try it, we will never know. We might continue on with Love Living Locally, which, because it's so successful, is becoming more of an impost. So I think we have this opportunity presented by happenstance that we've had these 2 years off. I think now is the time to do that pilot, try our very best, see what the interest is like, and then... if it doesn't work out in the way that we thought it might, then we have the option to go straight back to Love Living Locally, which we know everybody loves. So that's why I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Just before I ask Councillor Midgley to sum up, I just wanted to add my support for the motion. Look, I think Love Living Locally has been a great success, and it was really great to hear Councillor Midgley's summation of how it began and where it has been in that time. And she clearly has a passion for it. And I really appreciate that. But I think what I'm hearing, and from what I've read and speaking to Dr. Stevenson about how we move forward with it, I think it is a tremendous... tremendously resource intensive event for our community development staff, and we know that they are stretched. They are also particularly stretched at the moment because we have one staff member who's off on leave without pay for 12 months and that position hasn't been backfilled. The other thing, and Councillor Midgley and I had a meeting with a community member last year sometime. There is a lot of appetite from different community organisations to be involved in events that they want to run in Kingborough, and the thing that has held most of them back is that it's very difficult for them to obtain grant funding to do so. And particularly if they want to have performers, they struggle to get to find funds that will actually pay for those performers, and it's not very fair then, for those performers to be expected to participate for free when other people potentially get paid for taking part. So I think the case was well put to me by that resident and others who I've since spoken to about. There's a lot of potential out there to have different types of events that, we've talked about pumpkins and tomatoes and random things, but I'd love to see, and I've spoken about it here before, I'd love to see a multicultural food festival in Kingborough. I think that would be wonderful and would appeal to a wide range of people, and you could have performances there, and you could make it that it would appeal to many different people. But I don't see that it's our role to run major events because we don't have the capacity to do so. And so the best thing that we can do is assist community organisations and groups who want to actually do that. And assist them we will still through the community development team. And hopefully that will then build the capacity within those organisations to continue those events and make them bigger and bigger and bigger. But sometimes they need that bit of assistance in those preliminary stages so that they understand how to run an event. And we can provide that. And hopefully then eventually they become self-sustaining and we have a broad range of events that run in Kingborough at our wonderful community hub and other places around the municipality, because you know not everything has to be centred here in Kingston at the hub. So I think this is a great opportunity. I think that we, as others have said, we can try this. If it doesn't work, then we need to rethink the strategy. But if we don't try, we won't know, and we might miss a wonderful opportunity of something that we haven't predicted yet. And if the Foo Fighters ever come to Kingborough, then, you know, that'd be remarkable. So I support the recommendation. And Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum
Could
up?
Could I ask a question?
You just got in the nick of time. Councillor Fox.
Mayor, I just wondered whether there would be an alternative that we could consider, that we were to go out to our service clubs and ask if they are interested in organising Love Living locally, and that we would support them to do so in the same way that they organised the Day on the Beach, for example. Would that be an alternative that we could consider?
I know that a number of them have been involved in the past. I don't know whether they would have the capacity to run the entire organisation. Dr. Stevenson, do you?
I know that we do provide significant support to A Day on the Beach when it is run through our community services team and our works area. And I noted in this report that actually there had been involvement of the Lions, I think, in the past with Love Living Locally. So, but the advice I had was that we still bore the Lions' share of the work. So I don't know that it...
No pun intended.
I don't know that necessarily is going... There's no clarity around that for me. We would have to work pretty hard, I think, to develop a relationship that would deliver on that, and that's probably a very different motion than what's suggested in the paper.
Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up?
Thank you, Mayor. Just a few quick points. I think what you said, Mayor, really highlighted a number of key issues, and that it is a pilot, and that staffing is stretched, and there's been a bit of a break. Kingborough has really changed a lot in the last couple of years as well. It makes my heart really happy that everyone loved the Love Living Locally and the celebration, because that's what it really was about. It was about celebrating Kingborough and what there are many things to offer, and you never know, in the grant round someone might want to do their own Love Living Locally and, you know, that sort of a thing. So I support the recommendation. I was deliberating during the discussions. I support that, and I look forward to what might come and also the feedback from staff in regards to this pilot program as well.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll put the motion as printed on page 105 of the agenda. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Glade-Wright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? I'll have a show of hands, please. All those in favour is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Glade-Wright, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against is Councillors Fox and Bastone. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 106, the March 2022 financial report, with a recommendation on page 108. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. A mover in Councillor Westwood and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us the financial report for March 2022. As outlined in the report, Council's underlying surplus for March is $6.2 million, which is $100,000 favourable variance on the budget for 21-22. Interestingly, the forecast result for 21-22 of a $590,000 underlying deficit is exactly in line with the budget for the year. So congratulations, Mr. Breen, on track to exactly hit the budget. I did have a couple of questions which I emailed to Mr. Breen earlier in the week. Question relating to the first dot point about statutory fees and fines, $119,000 under budget due to revenue from planning being $189,000 under budget as a result of reduced volume of applications and limited subdivision activity resulting in less post-approval income. Just after some clarification on that, given we have been, my understanding is that the planning department has been inundated and very busy of late with applications.
Mr. Breen.
Yes. Excuse me, through you, Mayor. Essentially our volumes are still tracking below the previous year. Based on the calendar year numbers, our volume of basic planning applications was 741 for 2021 as opposed to 785 in the previous year. Admittedly, the 785 was a significant increase on the year before that, and a lot of that was subject to the government stimulation around COVID in regards to building activity. This calendar year, we're at 126 applications, whereas at the same time last year was 159. What we have seen, volumes pick up a little bit in February and a bit more in March, so we're starting to see a little bit more activity. The theory is that the lack of materials, the inability to get builders has slowed development of housing down. So we're still seeing numbers less than we saw previous years, but there are some small signs that things are picking up.
Thank you. The final dot point under 4.1, grants capital under budget by $153,000 due to a delay in the receipt of the next funding allocation of $2 million under the city deal, which is expected to be received in April 2022. Just wondering, given we're more than halfway through April now, whether we have received that yet and why the delay, please.
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So essentially the grant deed that we have for the city deal funding required us to submit us a construction progress report to get the next lot of funding. Clearly we haven't started construction yet, so we don't have a construction progress report that we can provide. So essentially the project managers has been in discussions with the Department of State Growth in regards to our status and the need to access funding prior to us being able to commence construction. His understanding is he's had a favourable discussion, but we are still waiting for something in writing from the Department of State Growth, bearing in mind that we had the discussions in November last year. So, but he did undertake to ring again and start pestering them in regards to getting that that notice in writing that the grant deed will be changed.
Okay, thank you. And then just in regards to depreciation, it mentions the impact of road revaluation. Could I have some information about what that means?
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So this year we've undertaken the road revaluation effectively from the 1st of July. Our expectation was that it would be pretty well neutral. And admittedly, $100,000 over is pretty neutral when you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of assets. But essentially what's happened is the road seal costs end up being a little bit higher than expected, and it has a minor impact on depreciation to the extent of probably $100,000 or a bit less. So we're working our way through that. And the final depreciation for the year will be a little bit dependent on our new assets that we've put on board, and we'll get a clearer picture of that over the next 2 or 3 months when we capitalise the remaining assets for the year.
Thank you. And then just on that, 100,000, as you say, is not significant. We have had in the last couple of years some significant variations that have come through. Are you anticipating that will happen again this year?
Through you, Mayor. No, not at this stage. We've identified the assets that are newer assets and therefore will have some impact on depreciation. The other one that we can get a bit of a surprise from is gifted assets. But the expectation is that will not be overly significant this financial year. So my expectation is that we'll be around about that 100,000 over.
Thank you. And then just to sum up, thank you for your advice over the last few years while we have worked really hard to get us to this point. So I say there's still some uncertainty around, but I think that as a council, following the advice of staff, we have worked really hard to get our budget into a good position, and we've had our budget workshop, currently out to consultation on next financial year's budget, and just like to reiterate that I would be really keen to see us continue with our responsible financial management, and because you know, what we have before us is evidence that that really does produce good outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Further speakers, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question about Bruni. The private works on the private works revenue of $257,000 over budget for works undertaken on behalf of the state government on Bruni. Is there more detail around what the works are, and will that be an ongoing thing?
This was funding from the state from the last election, wasn't it, Mr. Breen?
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Essentially, on Bruni Island, we have the main roads contract, which provides us with regular income, and that's certainly, we've now renegotiated a new deal for that, and that's slightly over budget, but it has been significant work this financial year, some in regards to extra funding, but generally, there's always a number of projects that they want us to do that's outside the normal contract. So the expectation is that some of this will be ongoing. It's just really, really difficult to predict how much it will be, and sometimes it even depends on government funding. So if they've got a bit of excess funds, they will throw a bit more dollars at doing a particular project.
Thank you. And I assume, yeah, with the federal election, then who knows what might happen, I guess, as well. My next question is just about, well, it relates to 4.2. Council's cash and investments amount to $21.2 million at the end of March, which is up 9.8 from the March 2021 figure, and that's offset by borrowing of 22.3. In terms of our cash balances, how would you characterise those? Is it fairly unhealthy or healthy? Or
Mr. Breen.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. I guess in essence we're in a net deficit, so we've got more borrowings than we have got funds, which is not an ideal situation to be in. But on the other hand, the money has been used to fund pretty significant development, being Kingston Park. So I think that's where it's appropriate to go into a deficit when you're funding a significant capital project, and we certainly have a plan to repay that debt over a period of time and restore our cash balances. So look, I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. We've got a plan, and we'll move to a cash surplus pretty quickly.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further speakers? Councillor Westwood, do you want to sum up? Thank you. I'll put the motion then is that the Council endorses the attached financial report as of the 31st of March 2022. Moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Turning now to page 166. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no notices of motion received. Still on page 166, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session. There are a number of items: confirmation of minutes, application for leave of absence, panel for the provision of legal services, tender assessment, Whitewater Creek shared path rehabilitation, tender assessment, Adventure Bay Road reconstruction, and land sale at Hutchins Street. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Westwood. Seconded, Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. In accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease.